When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Derek here. Just to let you know, today's episode contains some fresh language, specifically swear words and strong opinions. From Heads of Studios and Dublin, welcome to Mother Folklore. Podcast of words, Irish words, and words from Ireland. I'm Derek O'Shea.
I'm Patrick Quinonic.
And I'm Geraldine McAvoy.
And you're all very welcome to our hot gale summer.
That is an extremely online reference.
It's a little bit. Do you want to tell our older fogeyish listeners what that means?
I'm not sure I'm qualified. Geraldine, do you know what a hot gale summer is?
No. No, I don't know what a hot girl summer is, therefore I don't know what a hot gale summer is, and I'm too embarrassed to ask. I'm the guy on the bus who doesn't know what a tracker mortgage is. I don't know what a hot girl summer is.
Yeah, I think it's got something to do with it being hot and the girl being hot and something like that, and it being summer.
I'm delighted that you have not let this ignorance stop you from using the term, and the fact that you're proceeding balls out into this mimetic ambiguity. So, congratulations, podcast dad. That's a good online thing you did.
Well, the important thing to remember is that it is it's a summer of hot takes about Irish. Specifically, the phenomenon of silly season goes back to the early days of the daily newspapers in the United Kingdom and elsewhere, where in the month of August, when parliaments were down, when various sports were kind of in between major tournaments, there was less sport news and there was less political news, and also the big major courts were closed and the newspapers needed to fill copies somehow. So they often found certain perennial bugbear topics or other amusing stories of interest, like the fish cannon.
The fish cannon. I am here for the fish cannon. I want somebody to develop, I don't have the wherewithal to develop it myself, but I want somebody to develop a Futurama-sized human fish cannon so that we can all commute in comfort and style.
It is the technological solution to the border that the Brexiteer has been talking about.
We're just going to hoosh you over the border. Thunk.
Where are you going?
I just want to talk to the fish after he gets hooshed over a big dam and like ask him, is he okay? Like what? How do you get back? Like, I just want to know about his life. Like, did he have family on the other side? Is this an escape? Like, what is this?
I just saw a lot of fish queuing and I decided to join the queue.
I thought they were selling drugs. Fish always have that sort of what the hell just happened to me look on them anyway. So
do they have a fishy look?
Get out.
Get out.
Well, it's funny you should ask, but...
Oh, no. No, no, no.
Get out.
That's it. Stop the podcast. No.
Okay.
Listen, it's been a good run, but that's it.
Some of us are being fired through fish cannons and having a great time, and but others of us are down here on dry land reading some really... whack takes on the Irish language in the newspapers. I guess a lot of columnists feel that during the month of August they can whack out a lot of
shite.
Provocative.
Shite. The word you're looking for is shite. They can whack out a lot of shite about the Irish language in August because there's nothing happening. Love Island is finished. The Premier League has just started back up. There's this lull. There's this gap that you were talking about, and it's just full of shite.
And we're going to put that shite under a microscope today
to examine the shades of shite.
We're gonna put it in a microscope and see how runny it is. Specifically, we are going to look. We have gone through some of the writing since the summer about various Irish language related topics. We've broadly categorized them. I'm going to, obviously, myself, Pater, and Garagine have very strong feelings on these things. We're going to be as succinct and factual as possible when we go through some of these topics. So
we're going to try not to defame people.
Yes.
If that's in any way possible.
Okay, we're going to go through these. And because there's so many, we're going to try and be, you know, relatively brief. Anyway, I'm going to start off. Hot Gale Summer begins right now. And the first point that comes up a couple of times is compulsory Irish breeds resentment. Eamon Delaney, the author of An Accidental Diplomat, and the former editor of McGill, who tried to develop, wanted to have a right-leaning weekly magazine in Ireland, and a correspondent who often kind of falls on that side of the house.
Founder of the Hibernia Forum.
Yes.
A shadowy lobby group, the relevance of which will become clear later.
And apparently he's a fan of Ronnie Drew.
Well, he's a fan of the fact that Ronnie Drew didn't do most of his singing in Irish. For some reason, he feels that that's relevant. This piece says that the Dubliners didn't have to sing in Irish. And isn't that great? They had the choice not to sing in Irish. Because apparently, being a successful recording artist that's famous internationally is exactly the same as sitting the fucking Leaving Cert. Exactly the same.
Okay.
And that's the metaphor Delaney's using.
Oh,
it's
God.
Exactly,
do you know what? I'm
the same.
I'm so tired of this. Like I'm so fucking tired. Like that's just the, oh God, stop. Somebody stop.
Okay.
Can I just get to the nub of the point that they're trying to raise? They say that compulsory Irish breeds resentment. That's not grounded in fact. It's just not grounded in fact. The majority of students currently in the education system, the majority of people aged between 17 and 24 actually, have a positive disposition towards the Irish language. The majority of people who went through the Irish language system, over 50%, the Irish education system, even in English, and who suffered, compulsory Irish, it doesn't breed resentment in them. Compulsory Irish breeds resentment in middle-aged columnists who did the Leaving Cert 10 or 12 years before the current crop of Leaving Cert students were born. And I just wish someone would just be brave enough, just have the cojones to just say, I didn't like Irish. Not, it breeds resentment among, that's not grounded in fact. It's just not true. And I would just love it if we applied the same rigorous standard of fact-checking that we're supposed to apply to the media, to columnists like this who decide to spend their August saying, everyone hates Irish. No. No, they don't. And the other thing is, everyone fucking hates school anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, when you start offering kids the chance to opt out of subjects, they're going to take it. If somebody told me that I didn't have to do maths, I'd have bitten your hand off. But it doesn't mean I resent maths. Or, yeah, so Eamon Delaney's point is that, and it's a weird one, because in this article that was published in the print edition on the 12th of August and online the previous day on the 11th in the Independent. His point is a bit of a weird one because he says that the Irish language movement is flourishing, that the Gaelscoileann are flourishing and that loads of people love Irish, but simultaneously at the same time it's all a big pretense and we're pretending the Gaeltachts are bigger than they are and we're pretending that more people speak Irish than they do. And every single kid who does compulsory Irish resents it. So it's a bit of a weird one. It brings to mind Schrodinger's Gaelgor, you know? Schrodinger's Gaelgor being the shadowy elitist who doesn't want you to join his elite club, but at the same time wants to shove Irish down your throat. So it's, it's this nonsense of, and again, it's filling time. And, you know, to be honest with you, it's not even the worst thing in the article. So, I mean, we haven't even started on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have touched on a point which we're going to come to shortly. But first of all, he raises another key point in this article, which we're going to get to next. And there's a direct quote. He says, the Irish language lobby are like the NRA in the United States of America, not the National Roads Authority, the National Rifle Association he's referring to. No politician dare cross this cranky lobby. And so we persist with the idea, for example, that the Gaeltacht areas are bigger than they are and that Irish is a working language of the EU. Specifically now, it's important to point out in the context that in days after significant shootings in the United States, to compare any organization to the NRA is a fairly
it's fucking tone deaf. That is literally the best thing that can be said about that, is that it's tone deaf. Giving Eamon Delaney the benefit of the doubt and assuming that he's a well-intentioned person, all we can say is that was tone deaf. The worst case scenario being that it was deliberate and it was chosen in order to vilify and to make people who advocate on behalf of Irish language rights, to make them out to be abhorrent and the villains. And I say this as someone who speaks, I mean, obviously I'm affected by this because I was literally on the radio talking about Irish language rights and about compulsory Irish and about recent studies. And this is all that we're in week three or week four now of this debate that's born out of one sentence in a report around mandatory and compulsory subjects. And the sentence in the Irish Times report the day after this forum was held on subjects for the Leaving Cert, it said there were mixed opinions about the Irish language and its compulsory nature. That's all it said. It said that. We're now into week four of the should it, shouldn't it, should it, shouldn't it. And not one person is interested in dealing with the scientific backing for that. Like, as to why, what, even the cultural reasons as to why Irish is a compulsory language at all levels in the education system. Like, like, for Christ's sake.
And I think that's the most frustrating thing for me. It's that it's the same tired arguments constantly. Like, but all three of us have surely been on, like, radio shows or, like, have been asked to comment on this repeatedly against these same tired arguments that are not one, like, none of them are based in fact or in, like, peer-reviewed research. It's some fella's opinion. And I'm supposed to put, you know, some sort of, like, scientific argument or, like, sensible argument against some fella who didn't like reading Peg one time 40 years ago. And it's just so frustrating that these same arguments keep coming up and you're supposed to take them in reality when they're actually not based on anything but some fella's opinion, and mad opinions at that. I mean, I wouldn't even dignify that comparison with a response, because it's just, like you said, so tone deaf. Like, it's so gross in this day and age to say something like that.
Yeah.
Again, if you're going to give the benefit of the doubt, maybe you're just trying to, like, evoke a response. I don't know. But, like, come on.
There's an implication now that obviously, unless he thinks that the Irish language activism shouldn't have any lobbying or activism themselves, if he thinks that they maybe, by comparing them to a nasty lobby group, is he suggesting that, well, that they should conduct their business in a different way? That's hard to take that seriously if he doesn't actually like what they want to do at all. The implication that Gaelicus are going about something the wrong way does suggest that there's a respect for the goals and I wish you just do things differently. I don't even think that. Yeah.
As the founder of a free market libertarian think tank like the Hibernia Forum, maybe it's a compliment. Maybe he loves the NRA and he thinks, you know what, the Irish Language Group, they're just like the NRA. They've got politicians in their pockets. I wish we had politicians in our pockets. I wish we were one cohesive lobby group like the NRA.
Yeah.
And I wish politicians were afraid of us, because then the Gaeltacht Dé wouldn't be the poorest areas in the country. Then investment per job in Gaeltacht areas wouldn't be less than any other place in the country. Then you wouldn't have... I read this article just recently. Somebody got a quote from Irish Water of €67,000 to hook their house in the Gaeltacht up to the water mains. Like, how in the name of God are we supposed to save the Gaeltacht if it's going to cost you €67,000 to get running water into your house? Like, young people can't stay in Gaeltacht areas. Mm-hmm. They just can't. Like, there's no broadband, there's no jobs, there's no investment, there's no services, there's no shops, there's no post offices, there's no public transport, there's no hospitals, there's no doctors, there's now no guards. Like, there's, like, yeah. If we were some shadowy lobby group that politicians were afraid to take on, the Gaeltacht Dé wouldn't be in the shite they are. And that's the fact of it. So just give me somebody who knows what they're talking about, who wants to tell me that Irish is shit. Give me somebody who has the facts behind them and wants to tell me that Irish is shit, and I listen to them all day long. But don't give me this nonsense, it's... like Garradine said, the same shit 30 years ago, because somebody who did the Leaving Cert in fucking 1704 had a teacher they didn't like.
I know. Yeah, that's. I think you're kind of right there. I think I imagine when Eamon Delaney did the Leaving Cert, I'd say I suspect Bananarama were still releasing new music. But anyway, the third.
Is that your definition of old? Because I feel attacked.
So, The third point that we have identified, or that this has been reported on a bit, students, Leaving Cert students and future Leaving Cert students have been surveyed and are against it. And this is referring more recently to the NCCA survey earlier on this year, which identified mixed views on, or a spectrum of views on compulsory Irish. But
imagine that. People have a spectrum of views. What?
I know.
Is this? People have different views.
Let's
write some more articles about that.
You know yourself, I mean, I just find it funny because even like within, like there's a spectrum of views within the Mother Folklore team. There's a spectrum of views within like within Head Stuff. There's a spectrum of views within your group of friends. And the implication that a spectrum of views indicates that the negative ones have more weight than the positive ones.
Can I go to the report that everybody's talking about? Because it's funny how this has snowballed, because it started off with there was a mix of opinions to now more recently the students are against it. Many students felt that Irish should be an optional subject. I don't think it's essential, like you're not going to use it after you leave school realistically. However, others highlighted the importance of retaining at least some exposure to the language for students. I think it's really important for Irish students, the culture of Ireland. I think people should be able to speak Irish fluently. That's it. That's the beginning and the end. That is the analysis of Irish as a compulsory subject. They have quoted two students, one for, one against, and that's it. And now we have people going, oh, they're all against it. It's like, again, sweet, sweet crumb dove, God of death, give me patience.
Okay. So the next one, and this... it's
moving fairly swiftly. Yeah. But I will point out as well that like they surveyed the schools as well, and like only 4 in 10, only 40% think that English, maths and a foreign language should be compulsory. But you don't get these headlines going 60% of schools are against compulsory English.
Listen, Patter, I know that every day I check this, I check the, what the surface area of a cube is. Every day.
I was wondering what your job was.
It's been a good 9 years since I've used Pythagoras' theorem. A good 9 years, I'm willing to say. I don't know how many triangles I've had to like find the angles of in the last 9 years, but I'm pretty sure it's zero.
But you know what the square and the hypotenuse is equal to, and that's just there. It's just there.
I mean,
it's good.
It's equal to the sum of the square and the other two sides.
You're damn right it is.
I don't know.
Yeah. So, moving swiftly on, the Ed Walsh, the man of the University of Limerick guy, he is, you know, he's he has a lot of opinions. He is a man with opinions, and
he's a man replete with opinions.
And you know, University of Limerick, let's all say, you know, very fine university,
class campus.
Oh yeah,
an absolutely class campus. Shout out to the UL Vikings, absolutely class campus.
But When Ed Walsh isn't based, he says suggesting that we fire all civil servants. He has some opinions in Irish, and one of which is the...
Wow.
Okay, that's where we're starting this one. All right,
the Irish language did better under so-called British oppression than under the Devil era of Devil era. I'm not sure if he uses like.
I think, oh my God, is Ed Walsh just giving Garradine an aneurysm?
Jeez. Sorry, I've been occupied by the spirit of Devil Era. That's what's just... Plague and Devil Era have occupied my spirit.
Garradine is no longer here.
Jesus.
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, I'm sure, like, because UL has a great reputation for science, a guy like Ed Walsh, who will respect the fact that during the so-called era of British oppression, that Irish was starting from a higher point that declined, whereas during the beginning of the Free State and of the education, the Irish language education system was starting from a much lower point. So suggests that it was doing better under British rule isn't based on empirical comparisons.
But yeah. It's just so not comparable. It's comparing apples and oranges. It's completely a different thing. One, now we have a fucking formal education system that, you know, we didn't really have under the Brits. We were being educated in hedge schools. Like, sure, maybe the system was better than, I don't know, I don't have any statistics from them. They weren't really great at filling in the census forms back then. But, like, I just, it's so uncomparable. And just from a... From an academic research point of view, like poor, like that's some poor research right there.
I think like, yeah, I'm inclined to agree that like it is poor research, but it's not research. It's not an academic paper. It's an opinion piece in the media, in the summer of hot takes and shit takes. But my only question for Ed is or for Professor Emeritus Walsh, give him his due. What's your point? Like, honestly, it's like saying the dodo was doing better, you know, when the Dutch first arrived than it was when they killed the last one. Like, you know, one of the biggest problems we have in our history, and you know, I got to give props to a really, really interesting show called The 10 Dark Secrets of 1916 by Paddy Cullivan, known to one and all as the lead singer of the Camembert Quartet and the Late Late Show house band. He does this show, or did this show rather, called The 10 Dark Secrets of 1916. And he points out that one of the things we did at the foundation of the state was keep the civil service and keep the education system that we had. So the idea that Irish did better at the start of Pierce's so-called murder machine than 60, 70 years into Pierce's so-called murder machine, because we didn't fundamentally change much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably true. And De Valera's policy of basically enshrining the geographical areas in which Irish was still spoken as the predominant language at the time didn't do incredibly well because of successive governments afterwards, because of a lack of investment in Gaeltacht areas, as we've even discussed earlier on this podcast. But at the end of the day, what is Ed's point and how is it relevant to today?
I guess he's basically saying that he doesn't like compulsory Irish and he doesn't think it's been a success, but I mean,
well, he's got a fucking roundabout way of saying that.
Yeah, he does.
Welcome, gather round the fireside and listen to a tale.
The Irish are a nation of storytellers, and Fireside, the Irish Storytelling Podcast, is having its very first live show at Bello Bar on August 22nd. The Fireside Sessions Beginnings will be an evening of folklore, mythology, some true tales, and even a few tunes. Sure, it wouldn't really be a session without them now, would it? Join me, your host, Kevin C. Olihan, and some very special guests of storytellers and musicians for an intimate and entertaining evening of what the Irish do best. No, not that, although we do hope there'll be a few of them too. August 22nd, Bello Bar, Dublin. Tickets on eventbrite.ie/thefiresidesessionsbeginnings. Follow us on Instagram at FiresideBard, and we'll see you all round the fireside.
Yeehaw. The next point I'd like to talk to is, this is earlier on the year, shortly after the local elections, in the Examiner, Gerard Howlin, noting that a number of recently elected councillors came from, who had attended a number of Gaelscoil, and he attributed the popularity in the Social Democrats and the Green Party to the new metropolitan elite. Basically suggesting that, you know, that Gaelscoil and to another extent Educate Together represent a hypocritical middle class elite of people who are not who don't realize how snobby they appear to the rest of them, normal people like him.
Yeah, normals. It's always us Gaelscoils that are we're marginalizing those normals all the time.
It's I'm not sure what school Mr. Howell went to. I know, like, I went to a Jesuit school called Gonzaga in Dublin 6. It's a very nice school,
you had a perfectly ordinary run of the mill fee paying private education,
you could
so
say
maybe you're not the one to comment on this.
No, but this is the very point. I think that, like, it's, I mean, if you think Gaelscoil and Educate Together schools represent kind of an elite with a certain foot in a door that you can't get into because you're Gerard Howlin, that's, I mean,
if you're former government advisor Gerard Howlin, there is a grain of truth in something Howlin was saying at the time, and I say this as a Green Party county councillor who went to a Gaelscoil.
One of the people he was talking about, effectively.
One of the people he was talking about, yeah. My Gaelscoil produced 5 county councillors in this last election: 4 on South Dublin County Council and 1 on Dublin City Council.
Yeah.
two Greens, one Fianna Fáil, one independent left socialist ecologically focused councillor, and one People Before Profit. Like, that's a good spread across the Irish political spectrum.
Yes, notoriously from like well-to-do backgrounds, all of those parties. Yes, like those are the political elite parties.
But like that.
No offense to any of those parties who I do vote for.
But like the thing about it is like, that Gael School is in Clondalkin. It's in a very mixed area. Parts of it solidly working class. Hazel de Nortoun, who went to that school, is now a sitting councillor in Ballyfermot, a socialist councillor in predominantly working class Ballyfermot, who went out, worked her arse off, canvassing areas that don't traditionally vote, getting people who are living in social housing estates and getting HAP tenants out, getting people personally affected by the housing crisis out to vote. And to suggest that she's part of some shadowy elite, like to have a former government advisor suggest that she's part of some kind of elite movement because she went to a Gael school, it's just tone deaf. It all comes back to this David McWilliams book where he decided to profile Gael school and picked one in Ranelagh.
Are you referring to Eurosceptic BlackRock graduate David McWilliams?
He had a perfectly ordinary fee-paying private education, just like the normals of the world.
I remember he was on Miriam Meets with his wife, and he was saying that the people outside BlackRock, you know, who hadn't been educated there, didn't completely understand what a spectrum society actually went there. And he based this on the fact that some big thickos were given rugby scholarships, and therefore it's a spectrum society. So before that vein on your forehead burst, Patter, I do want to point out that the implication that elitism because the schools he mentioned are specifically the non-Catholic or non-diocesan schools. And like, their snobbery has been a part of Catholic education in a very big way. Archbishop McQuaid himself was a former headmaster of BlackRock. And that's where he kind of learned his skills and made these connections.
There's a mentality in the Irish media at times, certainly among opinion writers, that people who sort of raise their heads above the parapet and say, I don't want a Catholic education, or I don't want an English language education, or I don't want the default, what we've had in the state for 90 years. I don't want to send my kids to one of the 96% or thereabouts of schools that are Catholic schools, or the 92% of schools that are English language schools. That they're uppity, to use a very, in America, a very racially charged term, but here a very socially charged term.
Yeah.
That's the kind of elitism as Gaelge, that this refers to. That these people have ideas above their station and they should just do what the rest of the poors do and send their kids to so-called normal schools, and then that's it. They won't bother me because I'm sending my kids to a fee-paying secondary school. They won't bother me because I'm able to purchase my way out of it, but for you to demand a certain type of education off the state, that's notiony, and you are the real elitist, and frankly, I reject that. And it really fucks me off.
Yeah, I think it represents a very specific view. It's not even a Dublin-centric view. I think it's a South County Dublin-centric view with respect to like the leafy part of South County Dublin view that says that the Gael School that you find in that part of Dublin are elite because all the schools in that part of Dublin are elite. So I grew up in rural Leash, and the only Gael School in Leash was a primary Gael School. And for the entire time of my second level education, and it's actually only quite recently, I think maybe in the last 4 or 5 years, but the Gael School in Port Leash was based in prefabs. They did not have a building. So there was no building for these students to go to. They took classes in prefabs that were freezing cold during the wintertime. And it was a really small school because they had literally nowhere to go. And recently they got themselves a building, but after years of trying. And it's just so frustrating that people who exist in this wealthy bubble, who see kids going to, like you said, kids from like normal backgrounds going to Gael School, and see them progressing and say, well, you just want a better life for yourself. You're trying to jump up class. How dare you? Like, this is not where you belong. You don't belong in this. And I have a problem with that. But again, no problem sending my kid to the fee-paying school in Wesley or wherever.
And a lot of this, I think, is down to the perception that there are two Gael School in with a Dublin 4 catchment area. and that do very well. In
there's a Cloch Dhu and a Cloch Éisteagán.
Cloch Dhu and Cloch Éisteagán would have maybe a have a catchment area, and some people see them have and get outstanding leaving cert results every year. And those stories, and because that isn't the story for every single Gaelscoil in the world, the fact that it's the only ones you've heard of because of where a person comes from doesn't mean that's necessarily representative of.
Like
everything else.
Cloch Dhu and Cloch Éisteagán were kind of trailblazing. They were among the first Gaelscoil in it, certainly among the first Gael Cloch Dhu, but they weren't the first by any means. And you look at the work that educational advocates, like for example, Kathleen Maud, put into trying to get Irish language education throughout Dublin and throughout Ireland. The majority of the success stories are way outside these, you know, Southside bubbles, like
yes.
Clondalkin, Talla, Ballymun, Fairhouse. There's so many areas that would be, you know, working class to lower middle class to middle class without being in these so-called leafy suburbs. And yet we go back constantly to this idea. And again, it comes back to the media, and it comes back to the role the media have to play in portraying things. And if you're going to go with lazy tropes, if you're going to accept lazy tropes as your starting point, then that's what you get. You end up with Gerard Howland being able to write and say that Educate Together and Gaelscoil in it are elitist concepts. And not be questioned on it, because that's where we are. If you have the facts behind you, if you have a grounding in some kind of statistical analysis of the situation, and you want to come back and say, well, actually, I found out that 65% of Gaelscoil students do have notions, Padder, then that's fine. Let's talk about it. But if your grounding is this commonly held idea that Gaelscoil are elitist, well, I'm sorry to break it to you, but that's wrong, and you need to rethink it.
It's the second aspect of Schrodinger's Irish speaker. We're both elitist and get all the jobs, but we're also peg who live on an island and have no place in modern society. Like, it can't be both.
Yeah, so we're moving swiftly on. I think we've given that one a third one. We are going to do a deep dive episode into the history and modern experiences of Irish medium education soon. So do keep an eye out for that.
Oh, Derek's mouth is writing checks. His ass is going to have to cash. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
The Peg photo. The photo of Peg.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ. Let the woman rest. Christ.
The photograph of Peg put next to articles about current Irish language education policy is a bit like putting a photograph of Paul Gascoigne next to an article at the Premiership.
It's even worse because Paul Gascoigne is still relevant to the Premier League. Peg is
no, but here
dead.
I only know who Paul Gascoigne is because his daughter was on Celebrity Big Brother one time. So
wasn't it Love Island?
One and the same.
Was
no,
it Love
Celebrity,
Island?
Big,
Celebrity
Brother.
Big Brother.
Yeah, she was great on it.
Was she?
Loved
That's
it.
Bianca Gascoigne.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bianca. Yeah, she's deadly.
Peg, the book Peg by Peg Sayers, came off the Leaving Cert syllabus 2 years before many of the current Leaving Cert students were born. It's just not relevant. It's like picking a book. It's like fucking Soundings. It's like putting a picture of Soundings onto the... Nobody has read Soundings in a million years. If you did Soundings for the Leaving Cert, I'm really sorry. You're old.
You cut me deep, bro.
I am, yeah. I'm bodying you.
You cut me deep, bro.
But it's like, it's just, it's so ridiculous. And like the reason, and as Gardine rightly says, let the woman rest in peace. Like Peg is, it's not even a bad book. The majority of people who use an image of Peg haven't read it. If they did read it, they half read it for their Leaving Cert. Which, like, have you ever come back and read any of the texts that you did for any language, for English or for anything like that afterwards, when you don't have to study them in a Leaving Cert context?
Completely. It's a completely different experience.
Yeah, Macbeth, they're unreal.
Macbeth absolutely slaps. It's class. Macbeth is unreal. And I hated it when I was 18. I hated it because I had to write these essays about it.
Oh, fuck off, you burning wood, you prick.
Yeah. That's a direct quote. Me, circa 2003.
Jesus, what? You can wipe the spot off, the blood, spot of blood off if you use a bit of bicarb. Anyway, so I think we are all agreed, that the trope of the Peg photograph is a statement of intent when it's next to an article. about
I think
Irish
there should be a fine for using PEG when you're there should be some sort of fine, and the proceeds should go to, like, I don't know, some like impoverished Gaelscoft community or all of them. Every time you use PEG, a picture of PEG, or some relative says to you, oh, you speak Irish, is it? God, I never liked PEG in school. And I'm like, I don't know, Auntie Maureen. I never read PEG because I'm not a million years old. Like, stop. There should be a fine. There should be a PEG jar, like a swear jar. Every time you mention PEG, you have to put money in it.
Yeah, and that money goes to rebuilding PEG's house on the Blaskets.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent idea. Excellent.
We will create an island paradise on the Blaskets eventually, and it will be paid for by the Irish Independent and the Irish Times putting 20 quid a time into the PEG jar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, there's going to be an article about the Rugby World Cup with a big picture of Keith Wood next to it.
Again.
More relevant.
More relevant, like, you know what I mean?
He's, I remember Keith Woods.
He's like, Keith Wood is not dead. Like, you know what I mean? And Keith Wood played in his most recent World Cup more recently than the book PEG came off the Leaving Cert. Like, you know what I mean? Keith Wood was like the player of the tournament in the 1999 World Cup. PEG was not on the syllabus at that stage.
Yeah. River Phoenix is still alive when people were last studying PEG.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Checks out.
I had to think back. What year was that? 95?
94.
94.
I think. Actually, we'll double check that. But anyway, the next point is...
No, we won't. We won't. We'll just leave it out there.
Yeah,
tweet us.
We'll let our listeners do
it. I don't want to Google it. Tweet us what year River Phoenix tragically passed away.
Okay. The next point...
Specifically tweet me who River Phoenix is, because I don't know who that is.
Oh.
I hear.
Oh, no.
It belongs in a museum.
River Phoenix was the young Indiana Jones in the pre-credits scene of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. But he was a very promising young actor who was tragically taken far too young.
Best known for Stand By Me, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. Good movie.
Great movie. And so the next point, and this is, I know this is garaging this and it's close to your heart, is that compulsory Irish is unfair to children with extra learning needs due to maybe a learning difficulty or condition such as ADHD or dyslexia.
Exactly. And I have a lot of feelings about this. And I understand that many advocates for dyslexia have come out against Irish as compulsory Irish. And to an extent, I agree. I do not think that every kid, that compulsory Irish for kids who have learning difficulties is beneficial. However, I also don't think a blanket exemption is very helpful. And I use my own experience as an example. Like, to think that kids who have dyslexia, as I do, in the form that I have it, which is quite mild, would have been exempt from Irish and would have been completely deprived of all of the opportunities that I've had in my life because of Irish. And not just like opportunities that like financial opportunities or like educational opportunities or whatever, but like actual like in opportunities to like build a social life or to make friends or to have experiences that have changed me, but not necessarily increased my bank account. Like those experiences, to have them denied for me because a box was ticked that said that I didn't have to do Irish. So I do think there's issues at play. I think it's frustrating to see the assumption that Irish is a difficult language for kids with dyslexia, because there is no research to back that up. I do agree that the way we teach Irish, and I'm not blaming teachers one bit, I'm blaming the curriculum and the way we do it, is not necessarily susceptible to a dyslexic person because of all of the learning and the transcribing. And not teaching a language is really difficult. But I've said it before in an earlier edition of the show. I talked about how I don't think it's particularly a difficult language for a dyslexic student. And just my own example that happened quite recently in the last like couple of months, I've been doing a lot of transcribing of interviews I did for my research, and I interviewed a lot of people in Irish, and a lot of those people had like words that I'd never encountered before, or they had like a dialect that I wasn't familiar with. And it was the first time I'd ever experienced it where I was transcribing something, and I was, so say I came across a word that I'd never heard before, but I just knew how to spell it, and I'd put it into folklore and I'd be like, oh, that's what the word means, because I innately knew how to spell it because of the way it was sounded. And that has never happened to me before in any language. And it was just such a lovely moment for me to feel that way, because I'd never felt that before. Like when I'm spelling something that I haven't seen in English before, like sometimes I spell it so poorly that not even Google is like, did you mean? Google's like, we don't know what the fuck you meant. Like, sorry, yeah. we can't help you here. And on top of that, like, I do a lot of work with like deaf people. And in the last while, kind of like, I have a lot of like deaf friends or people I know who are deaf who've contacted me asking or told me that they're learning Irish because kids in deaf schools don't learn Irish. They've been exempt for a very long time. And it just made me really sad that there's this whole cohort of people who've been deprived for very many different reasons of opportunities in life, nothing to do with the Irish language, but they're also deprived of that small connection to Irish culture that everybody else has. So when they're on the Luas or when they're, you know, going to a public building and there's signs in English and Irish, they don't have access to the Irish ones. And like, this is a community that are deprived of access in so many different areas. And it made me so sad that we just assume that because you're deaf, you don't get to have Irish because you're not able for it. And telling somebody that they're not able for something or they can't do it because is just, I just think it's so wrong. So I do think there's problems with some people. I'd imagine there are some people who maybe use dyslexia as an excuse to get exempt from Irish. But does that not speak to a larger problem about the difficulty of the education system? Like, we're putting kids under huge pressure to score well in exams that are not fit for purpose. Like, that's the problem. It's not Irish. And I've ranted enough now, probably.
My thoughts on this one are fairly simple and straightforward. Like, why is it only Irish?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What makes learning Irish more difficult or more inherently unsuitable for people with learning difficulties than French or German or English? You know, they're all languages. It's all literature. It's all. So it sort of gives the lie to the Eamon Delaney article we were talking about earlier on. Like, that there is no pretense that Irish is a spoken language. Like, there's no, the Department of Education and the government are not quaking in their boots at the thought of the Irish language lobby coming to get them. There's absolutely no pretense here. There's literally nothing available for people for whom Irish is their first language and they have a learning difficulty or any kind of disability that means that they can't access the same education system as everybody else in the area. If you're a first language Irish speaker and you have dyslexia, I was reading threads on Twitter over the last couple of weeks about people who literally had their disability questioned because they chose to carry on with Irish because it was their first language. Like, there are no deaf people in the Gaeltacht. There are no blind people in the Gaeltacht. There are no people with special needs in the Gaeltacht. There is nobody growing up through the medium of Irish with any kind of educational needs. That is the statement being made by the Department of Education. That is the pretense. And it sickens me. It's really, really upsetting. And this is not to take away from anyone at all who feels that their own educational difficulties necessitate an exemption from Irish. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. And there has been a readjustment of the rules. That's the article we're talking about. There's been a readjustment of the rules to allow the principal to have the final say. Based on a standardised test instead of an independent psychological assessment, which was negatively affecting people from disadvantaged backgrounds because you know the way the public system is. You could be waiting 2 years to get the results of that when you needed it immediately. So people were paying £600, which they didn't have, to get a psychological needs assessment that would give them the exemption from Irish. So I'd welcome the fact that it's not going to disproportionately affect poorer people. But, like, we all know, like, we had to, I mean, look at this education system, look at us as a country, look at parents, look at the way they talk about the education system, look at all of us. We all have to have a long, hard look at ourselves. We couldn't bring in continuous assessment as part of the Leaving Cert because everybody knew that if the teachers were marking their own students, it wouldn't be fair, it wouldn't be transparent, and it wouldn't be right. There would be too much pressure put on by parents onto teachers who are already overworked, who already don't have the resources, and it wouldn't be a transparent marking system. And now we're saying that the answer to this major, major problem we have, there are too many people struggling, apparently only with Irish, that we're just going to let it up to the principals to tick a box.
And Pat, are you suggesting that private schools who price their fees based on league tables released in newspapers every year, are you suggesting they might have a conflict of interest in giving people exemptions from Irish or from marking their own pupils?
No.
I am. I'm certainly suggesting that they have a conflict of interest.
Of course it's in a school's interest to game the system in such a way that their students achieve the top marks. And the top marks are not given based on how many subjects you took on. In fact, if you take on fewer subjects and concentrate on those, you have a better... So, yeah, if you offer a student an exemption from something and they're under tremendous pressure to attain high points in the Leaving Cert... Look, it all comes down to what do we want out of an education system? And I feel like I'm just banging my head against the wall whenever you try and talk about this. Like, do we want to create a system whereby people get as close as possible to 600 points and get into college? Everyone, literally everyone goes to college. Everyone does STEM. You know, the year is 2040. Everyone's an engineer and nobody knows how to grow a potato. Or do we want to have a system that creates rounded citizens who have an appreciation of the country that they're in? No matter where they come from, they have an appreciation of the world in which they live and the country that they're in and the heritage and the history of that country. Because that's what I want. I want to create better, more rounded, more informed citizens. I want to have an Ireland that is basically more inclusive and that is not attained by this ridiculous points race and this pressure that we're putting 18-year-olds. I'm 35. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And we're asking 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds to, like, first of all, you have to attain incredibly high marks in this really, really difficult thing, the Leaving Cert. If anybody has listened to this and they haven't done the Leaving Cert, right, it is the most difficult thing you will ever do in your life. Ever. Without a shadow of a doubt. The Leaving Cert is the most difficult thing you'll ever do in your life. And if all goes according to plan and all goes well, it's also the last time you'll have to put that much effort into anything you hate. You know, it's a terrible system. It's a terrible system. And, Christ on a bike. Guardian, you're over in Finland. We respect the Finnish education system. We look at the Finnish education system with envy. More compulsory subjects, not fewer. More languages, not fewer. And far less standardized testing. Like, what's it like over there?
It's actually almost nice in a sense that, like, so I recently did an interview with a Swedish language newspaper about my research in Ireland. And I had a load of Finnish trolls on Twitter tell me that compulsory Swedish was discriminatory to Finnish speakers, which in a sense was kind of nice that they exist in other countries as well. It's not just us, you know. I felt a little bit like twee there. I was like, oh, nostalgia, cute. But so there is an argument that somehow, you know, Swedish is a negative language to learn. But like in terms of education, while there is problems in the education system, I mean, when I listen to the problems that they exist here, I mean, they're just not comparable. I mean, like you said, I'm doing a PhD right now and it is monumentally difficult, but I still have stress nightmares about my Leaving Cert because for me, it was everything. It was the most important thing that I did well in that Leaving Cert. And it was such a negative time. I would like never do it again. And the way I see students here who like choose to, okay, they have to do a certain amount of they have to do Finnish, presumably maths, Swedish, and maybe English also, but they do a lot of like other stuff as well. There are some compulsory subjects, but like they've no pressure. I talked about it in the Finland episode. Like there isn't like the same pressure that we have on students to achieve a grade. It's more about like making yourself into a better person, which we really don't get. And I think it's so problematic when you say to a student who may have a learning difficulty and may be really conscious about the fact that they're different and that you say to them, well, you can't do this. You're not able for Irish because you're X. What is that student going to think? Well, I'm not able for it, so I'm not going to do it. So you limit them so much. And I think that is the biggest problem. You're telling a kid you can't do it without ever asking him, do you think you can do it? And I think that is the underlying problem, that we have to stop telling children that they can't do something because they are a certain way and boxing them into certain roles. It's just so wrong and so archaic and needs to change.
Yeah, and we're going to have to leave it there for today. Obviously, these topics are going to keep coming up. In the meantime, we will look forward to catching up with you next week. And if you read an article about Irish or if you see a headline about Irish in a paper, just
don't at me. Don't at me.
Yeah,
don't
do it. Me about it. I don't want to know about it. I'm so tired.
In the meantime, we will wish you big aslán from me.
Aslán wemshe.
And aslán from me.
Catch you next time.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
There's a mentality.
Sorry,
Gardin. Yeah. Look, there's a mentality. For fuck's sake. Right. You take it.
Sorry.
Then.
What was I going to say?